Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. To get involved, send email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Follow TA_weekly on Twitter or call 260-2-ASK-TAW. This is Aaron
and Rodney.
Welcome to Tech Access Weekly, episode 111, Not So Newsstand.
Actually, it's 112.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Who cares? I didn't even say the date.
That's true.
Oh, well.
Boy, 2 weeks with a theme and it's already screwed
up. We're already screwing it up.
It's just a little fun humor for the day.
Yes, it's been one of those weeks, so, you know.
One of those weeks. I'm just looking for the weekend. Oh, wait, your
in-laws
are
coming.
Oh, geez,
your in-laws came last weekend, and I didn't bitch about it. Or, I mean, your parents came last weekend, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but at least they go home after a little while.
That's true. It took them a while, but yeah. Anyway. We would like to, as always, say thank you to the listeners who emailed and commented to us. We really appreciate that. David Partrick really enjoyed the theme and the dings, and we got some input that other people really liked the dings as well. I was a little worried that people wouldn't like the dings. Exactly. So,
and some input from Twitter as well, so that
yes,
was good.
Thank you so much.
Involvement.
Love the listener involvement. Gotta love it. And also, thanks to Stephen Parker, he suggested a daily tip that will be coming up shortly as soon as I can actually get the thing, get it to work, because I'm fumble fingered and it involves lots of finger gestures with the Plex Talk Pocket. Then, let's see, who did I miss? Oh, yes, thanks to Brian Watson, as always, for suggesting some really good news articles. And if you have an article that's particularly newsworthy that you think that you would like to submit to us, please do so. TechAccessWeekly@gmail.com. Isn't that what it is?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Good.
I think so, yes.
Good. Good. And now...
And for the number challenged on the telephone is 260-227-5829.
Yes, to ask T-A-W.
Yeah. We wanted to put the numbers at the beginning, but, you know, it kind of sounds too good to go to ask T-A-W.
Yeah, it was too good to be true. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Took days of searching on Google Voice for that.
Days?
Well, at least I spent at least 45 minutes.
That's true.
To come up
with
something.
You did. Just like my Mushroom FM. 774, Ask Aaron. That took a while to find, too.
Yeah. It's amazing how creative I can get. Occasionally.
I know. Anyway, aren't we supposed to be taking a walk?
Why don't we be traveling along?
We're just going to take a little travel, folks.
In the ghetto.
Gotta love the literal net.
Yes.
We would like to talk and get it out of the way about our TA daily tip recently about iOS 5's newsstand.
Yes, the...
Not-so-new newsstand.
Yeah, the not-so-new newsstand that came out in daily tip number 308 on Wednesday, which was yesterday, the 12th.
Yeah. And people were saying that newsstand was not accessible. And granted, there's a kind of difference in what you mean. So there are a few levels to this. Newsstand itself is basically a repository for third-party apps that are magazines or newspapers.
Yeah, so you can get current... In iOS 4, you can get New York Times, Wired.com's app,
PC Magazine,
different things like that. And they're physical apps. The New Yorker is one, I guess, that a lot of people like.
So, if you've got these apps on your phone already, what's going to happen when you upgrade to iOS 5 is these apps simply get transferred into your newsstand. Newsstand is just a holder for all these apps.
Yeah, and on Twitter, it was kind of a newsstand isn't accessible, and it was one of those no real explanation. A lot of people going nuts over what's not accessible?
And really, newsstand is accessible if you're just talking about the Apple component of Newsstand, which is how to get articles, magazines and newspapers onto your device. That's the part that Apple controls, and that part is perfectly accessible, and that's what I did the tip on.
It is a little kludgy, though, if you do not have any of those apps, because it's not 100% evident what you're supposed to do when you first open it.
That's very true. And so that's why I pointed out, yeah, the little store button is kind of in the bottom right corner, and it doesn't automatically read it with VoiceOver in some cases. So you got to kind of hunt for it. So that's what I thought people were talking about. What people really were talking about is the apps themselves did not seem to be accessible. This is a question for the developer of the app to resolve. So if you have a... Every magazine and newspaper is going to read differently because they're developed by different people. At least most of them are. So some of them will be more accessible with VoiceOver than others. At least that's my educated guess.
Yeah, and in your tip, you just went over the newsstand.
Yes, because I went over the Apple part of it.
Because there's nothing different as far as the apps.
No.
It's one of those things where your mileage may vary based on the actual publisher.
Exactly. So there are two components, and I don't think people realized this, the Apple component and the third-party component. And if you've got a problem with the third-party people, you need to tell the third-party people their apps are not VoiceOver accessible because Apple doesn't control that.
Yeah, so the ghetto literal net sort of went a little bit nutso today because of that tip.
And, yeah. So I am going to put up another tip demonstrating how to read one of the magazines.
Which doesn't guarantee that the one that is picked will actually read just like the New York Times or something like that. I mean, right. You even come up with iBooks that read differently. Mm-hmm. I've downloaded some of the free iBooks, and some of them read just
perfect.
Janky.
And some of them read all kludgy, and it just, these apps are just like iBooks in that way.
Yeah, and newsstand is just putting it in one place. One thing that I will point out is that kind of freaked me out. When I downloaded a previously purchased magazine from the cloud, you know how you can go under your updates in the iTunes store. It downloaded it. It threw me to like page 5 of the iPhone.
Of the home screen.
Because
when it downloads an app, it puts it in the next available space on your home screen.
Yeah, and then when it finished, it was gone. It disappeared.
It totally vanished.
It went into newsstand, but it leaves you wherever your first available empty spot was. So if you all of a sudden get disoriented and say, how in the heck did I get here? It's not even on this screen. It's in newsstand.
Yeah.
And newsstand does not include things like Google Reader or Flip. Board or anything like that.
None of the news aggregators. Yeah, none of that. Just includes old timey newspapers and magazines.
Yeah,
that are trying to be hip and have iPhone apps.
So yeah, the literal net is just a little too literal. I guess they just figure, okay, if you're demoing newsstand, you should show that it reads.
But how can you do that when all the apps going to read different?
Yeah, and most and it is very difficult to find.
That little button is like. Hard.
Yeah,
that it's not in a. It's a teeny little thing, and it's not in a very. You'd think it'd be at the top, but it's not. It's like all the way at the bottom.
Yeah, and in the iTunes store, it is very difficult to actually find anything that is cheap.
In the newsstand,
because every single app practically is free, but then you have to do in-app purchases of,
in order to get any of the issues.
Yeah, individual issues or a subscription. So. I think I downloaded Inside Saturday, which is a preview of the weekend's college football here in the U.S. because it was only 99 cents an issue. Wake up!
Yeah, the stop-start sport of the United States.
Yeah, and she really does snore that way.
So do you.
Hey, I didn't say me. I didn't deny it.
Okay, let's leave. The ghetto. And we will now return to our regularly scheduled programming.
Yes.
Which begins with security news.
Wait a minute. Did we say October 12th at the beginning? I think it's the 13th.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, it's episode 1.
I might have to download this and find out.
It's episode 112 on October 13th.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I think that's what we said.
But it's not Friday, so it's Thursday.
Yeah.
After my week, I can't figure out what day it is.
Now we're just confusing everybody.
I was trying for that. This is what it's like to live with me.
True. That's very true. But you don't need to subject everyone else to it. It's bad enough that I have to deal with it every day of the week.
That's true. But I have to put up with your impatience.
That valid point. Oh, we got to hurry up.
Okay. Anyway, let's go out into the land of security. There's quite a bit going on this week. In a story we told you about last week, Google Chrome was found to be a virus by, I can't remember which antivirus it was.
Norton. No, it was Microsoft Security Essentials.
Yeah, it was Microsoft Security Essentials. Well, this week, Norton Internet Security and Norton 360 has marked Facebook as a phishing site. They realized this, and in about 4 hours after implementing that definition update, they corrected the issue.
Oopsie.
Microsoft is going to plug some critical Internet Explorer holes with their latest patch Tuesday that came out 2 days ago.
October 11th.
So you definitely want to update.
Warning, your computer may decide overnight to update. And another warning, it may take as long as 20 minutes.
Yeah, that was a little freaky. But Patch Tuesday is going to put out 8 bulletins. 23 holes are going to be fixed. Two of those bulletins will be critical, and 6 will be
moderate.
Important,
yeah.
Or moderate, whichever you want to call it. It's basically trying to fix a hole that involves Internet Explorer and Silverlight.net coding that will actually allow a attacker to execute code on a web page to infect and send information from your computer to somewhere else.
Whoops.
Yeah. Now, speaking of browsers, Internet Explorer 9 has been found to get 4 out of 4 stars as far as being the safest browser.
On yourwebmatters.org.
Now, the key to this is that the site is hosted by Microsoft.
Ooh. Hmm.
Little collusion.
You think?
Internet Explorer 8 got a score of 3 out of 4, Firefox a 2, Chrome a 2.5, and Opera and Safari did not even register.
I think I see collusion all over that.
Yeah, just a little bit.
You think?
But you can go to the site. There are buttons on there where you can actually evaluate your browser of choice. Those are the ones that were tested by the folks over at CNET, I believe.
Yeah.
Now, there is a new variant of the flashback virus for OS X that we mentioned a few weeks ago. That was version A, which actually tries to inject code into program code on your system. Flashback variant B actually will try to add code into administrator restricted areas, which is not a good thing.
No. And one thing you will notice, if you accidentally start installing with the fake installer, it asks you for a password.
Yeah, so
it should clue you right in that it's not quite right.
Yeah, it looks just like an Adobe Flash installer, and you can find information on the web as to how to disable it. This latest variant has a quirk where if a program called Little Snitch that apparently locks you down from connecting to remote servers is installed, variant B will automatically uninstall itself.
Only with Little Snitch, though.
Yeah, I guess it just decides, well, it's not worth it. I can't get out of this PC. Or
Mac,
I guess. They're all PCs, please.
Mm-hmm.
Get over the religious war.
I don't think that's going to happen. Now, BlackBerry had a big outage in Europe and East Africa?
It is Europe, the Middle East, and Africa.
I guess that's where I'm getting the East from.
It started on Monday, the 10th of October, and I believe it was just resolved this morning.
And when it was resolved, they tried to resolve it yesterday, I believe. And this, because there was such a backlog of messages from stuff from those parts of the world
There's
from the last 24 hours.
Outage.
There was a worldwide outage, and everything in the U.S. and Canada crashed, too.
Yeah, so I guess the cloud just isn't as reliable as people think. RIM, the makers of BlackBerry, have not released any information on what the problem was with their servers, whether it was a hack or what.
Other than saying, we're really sorry. Yeah. We really don't know any much else.
We hope you will trust us.
Yeah, hopefully. The Amazon Kindle Fire. You know, we were all fired up about that last week. You know what we haven't been doing?
You haven't been doing the dings.
I haven't been doing the dings.
Could you catch us up for a couple?
Let's see. Okay.
All right.
One more.
Ooh, good karma.
The Amazon
Kindle. If I was Adam Curry, I would have the, you've got karma.
The Amazon Kindle Fire is now under fire, this time by patent trolls. Acacia Research is trying to file a lawsuit, I guess, claiming that two patents have been violated. One, it's kind of unclear what they are, but one involves the way in which the Kindle Fire opens up individual apps, and another one involves the way in which it accesses the calendar. It's apparently a Palm patent that Acacia Research is trying to indicate that.
Yeah, but I believe Acacia handles the one for the icons that the Kindle Fire uses to launch applications.
Oh.
I believe the Palm patent was referenced just in terms of here's another patent that they're being sued over, and most likely it'll be one of those things that is settled out of court. And it also gives credence to the rumors that Amazon was trying to buy Palm.
Yes.
To possibly get those patents.
Hopefully they can settle that. Now, one note about the Kindle Fire. It is not set to ship until November, 19th?
15th? I believe one launches the 14th and one the 21st.
Oh, well, I was wrong on both counts. But I knew it was the middle of November. Well, Barnes & Noble is starting to get all retaliatory over the Kindle. Amazon has gotten a digital deal with DC Comics to have their comic books up in the Kindle store, digital versions in the Kindle store.
Yeah, and Barnes & Noble is greatly upset because currently they do not get digital versions of DC Comics.
So what are they doing? They're yanking all the hard copy versions of DC Comics out of their actual bookstore stores.
Yeah, so if you want DC Comics, you will have to go to the bookstore or to the internet.
Or, yeah. Well, you can't go to the Barnes & Noble bookstore. You won't get them.
Well, no.
You'll have to go to another bookstore or the internet. Now, it's interesting. Is Barnes & Noble going to have them online? They never said anything about yanking them off of their online store.
They currently do not have them.
Oh, that's true.
They currently don't
have them. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Barnes & Noble does not have DC Comics in a digital format. Amazon does.
But
DC Comics is not looking to make a deal with Barnes & Noble.
Right, but what I'm saying is just because they don't have it in a digital format doesn't mean that you can't buy it online in paper format. So can you still do that with DC Comics, with Barnes & Noble?
No, they have pulled it.
Okay.
They have pulled all references, I believe, to DC Comics on the website.
Oh, Sheldon, he would be so upset.
Very much so.
Mm.
Facebook is making yet another way to rule the world, or your personal world. They are working to unveil new plans for your future commerce via eBay.
They've struck a deal with eBay and XCommerce.
Yeah, eBay has this crazy thing called XCommerce, which is a combination of eBay, PayPal, and Magento that apparently handles over 100,000 different payment systems. So that Facebook will allow vendors to actually be able to make purchase systems so that you can tell everyone that I'm buying this, I own this, I want this, I recommend this,
I like this.
Or you can review this particular product and then share it with your friends.
So they can buy it too, right? Yeah. From Facebook.
Exactly.
You don't even have to leave.
You don't have to leave the closed cart.
Ooh. This is big stuff, people.
Yeah, so they'll be able to actually track you, possibly, with that.
Ew.
Nobody's actually said what is going to be encompassed in the deal, but
yeah,
maybe new changes coming so that instead of just being able to listen to music that people are using and
you can buy it right there.
You can buy it and share it.
Without even leaving.
And recommend it. And review it.
Yeah. Geez. Well, Facebook has an iPad app. Speaking of more Facebook news,
they finally got it.
Finally.
It was rumored that last week during the iOS 5 announcement that Facebook would put out
their iPad. Even during F8, they were rumored to have it.
Yeah, it's been going on for like a couple
months now.
Yeah, I think back in May, Zuckerberg said that, well, the iPad's not a mobile device, so why do they need an app? But anyway, they've released it. You can get it in the iTunes store. For your iPad, it has such things as video chat and other typical functionalities, but Ticker has not been integrated into the app just yet.
Apparently it looks clunky too. I, of course, don't have an iPad, so I can't say.
Yeah, there's been reports that it's a little funky acting, and it does have a tendency to crash.
Nice.
So maybe that's just a thing where they're waiting on iOS 5, which came out, which we'll get to shortly.
Not just yet, though. We want to talk about some crazy judge in California who made a...
Well, he's not crazy.
No, he's not crazy, but he's sort of behind the times.
No, actually, he's ahead of the times.
Not really.
Sort of.
No, because he only stated something that people have known for a long time now.
Well, a judge in California has ruled in a case that is going against the
University
UCLA.
UCLA.
Yeah, whatever that stands for.
The College of.
Yeah, the University of California, Los Angeles, I guess mm-hmm. it is, or whatever. They were in a legal battle that said that they violated the DMCA because they had streamed movies on campus that they personally owned.
The college owned
the college.
Them.
So this judge in California has decreed that if you own it, you can...
Rip it.
Rip it. It's your property. It is not a violation of DMCA regulations. Mm-hmm.
And this has been decreed in other parts of the country, too. But this happened, this is California's turn to actually have a judge say this.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's been one of those long-time things since the DMCA came out back in 1998, 99, mm-hmm. that you should be able to keep a digital copy of things that you personally own. And he decreed that educational institutions can do that. Doesn't say anything
about people,
because you know how it is. The MPAA thinks that you're going to go out and rip that copy of Forrest Gump and put it out on the front porch of your house and sell it for $5. Which,
yeah.
I mean, is it mm-hmm. going to happen?
No.
I guess it could happen. I wonder how much I could get for that.
I don't know.
In the saga known as Netflix and Quixtar, Quixtar is quickly dead because Reed Hastings over at Netflix has said that they have reconsidered because of the outlash.
It would just be so confusing to have two different stores to do your Netflix stuff. It would be too confusing for the consumer. So we're just going to quit Quixtar.
I mean, it's the worst thing possible to have a queue for streaming,
mm-hmm.
and then you want to get the DVD of it. You know, currently
on
Netflix,
you can see
it. Who came
up with
this
stupid idea?
I'm going to guess it's probably somebody in marketing.
Well. Yeah, but...
Because in working at a bank, usually the most idiotic concepts come from the people in marketing because they have no clue.
Which is sort of sad because they're the ones who are supposed to have all the clues.
But I didn't say that.
Shh.
So yeah, Quixtar is gone. The Quixtar, which is a horrible name because nobody in their right mind can pronounce it.
Spell it.
Or spell it because it's kind of co... We Quixtar should have a U.
It should have a C in there.
I don't get it. So they're going to keep the brand name Netflix and continue on their merry way. But he did stress that prices will remain the same.
Yes, that was the first thing in the letter. Prices are going to remain the same.
But I don't see that much of a problem with that because it still is a good value for what you get.
Definitely. On to Apple news. Steve Jobs, of course, passed away last week. If you were tuned in to Sarah Talks podcast, they gave a little bit of a commentary about it. Played something we said.
Yeah, that was this week.
That was cool.
They also
had Tuesday's podcast.
Yeah, they had their Sarahspective last week where they all reminisced over Steve Jobs and the iOS announcements and everything. It was announced over the AP that he passed away on Wednesday evening of last week around, I guess it was 7:45
Eastern
time, which was right while we were
recording the podcast,
which the Twitter went down. The social networks were having all sorts of problems. And it was kind of interesting because the Twit network went into 4-hour coverage. And then Eric Lanigan came on after that for his tech late night show or late night tech show where he does a lot of call-in stuff, and he did another 4 hours of people. So it was kind of impressive that much was going on. Plus I was impressed that CNN actually
covered it
for hours.
That was good.
I mean, no other news organization was covering it like
CNN. Did they even get Leo on there?
Yeah, they actually did get him on there for a short period of time to speak a little bit about it.
Because we were like waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because they kept going to all these journalists that they really didn't have anything unique to say.
Right.
But they were ignoring some of the people
that had something unique to say.
Yeah, they were kicking off the people that had something to say that were actually in the tech area. you know.
Not surprising, but still sad.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Apple does over the next 5 years. Most likely, seeing as how Jobs had come up with this idea for the big spaceship-looking building, the round building in California, you know, most likely they've got a five-year plan already set up.
Yeah, I would assume so. Most businesses have at least five-year plans set up, especially big corporations,
yeah.
Even 10-year plans. So I think for the first few years, I think they'll be fine. It's just going to depend. Someone with that level of innovation and vision comes around, you know, only once in a while, so.
Yes, pretty much our generation's version of Edison, probably.
Yeah, I would think so.
That's what I would think, because he did develop the voiceover that is on PCs.
You mean Macs?
Well, like I said, they're the same thing. Different box. Macs, PCs, all of that sort of runs together, but you can actually go into a store and get something that speaks and something that has magnification already built in. We don't have one, so I'm assuming that all the stories are true.
Uh-huh. you lost me there, but that's okay.
Where'd I lose you?
He only lost me. Comes on, what, you know, someone like him only comes on long once in a way, and you just have to be thankful for what you got and hope that everything stays okay with the company. Now, if you tuned into my Melting Pot show on Mushroom FM, or you can go grab the podcast from Mushroom FM. I talk a little bit about Steve Jobs and his vision for music in the digital age and how that vision pretty much transformed the way we deal with music now, since everything is going digital. Just to say also, his funeral was last Friday in Cupertino, California. Small private funeral. And I'm not sure if the Westboro Baptist Church folks came to protest it. They threatened to. I'm not sure if they actually went or not.
Yeah, I never heard any reports of it. Usually they make a lot of threats but never show up.
Well, sometimes they have shown up.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if they did or not. And Apple, this Friday, October 14th, is Wear Your Black Turtleneck and Levi's Day. In remembrance of Steve Jobs.
Yeah, if you have been under a rock and don't know, Steve Jobs always wore a pair of Levi's jeans and a mock turtleneck, which apparently has quadrupled in sales
the over mock the turtleneck.
Last week.
A black because, one? Just the black yeah, one or other yeah. colors?
The company that actually sells it, I can't remember what brand it is, but they were saying that they've seen like a huge increase in sales.
That's funny. Wow.
So people are trying to get something that reminds them of him, I guess.
I guess.
But yeah, it's definitely somebody and that's going to be missed for
on
quite a while.
October 19th, Apple employees, or Apple may be having a remembrance moment for their employees, you know, at the Infinite Loop campus. We're not sure about this, but that's what an email from Tim Cook said.
Yeah, that's being rumored at the moment. I don't know that it's 100% confirmed as of yet.
So anyway, that is the Steve Jobs information for the week.
Yeah. So now in other Apple news, Apple has released OS X 10.7.2, which includes iCloud support and other bugs, fixes, and stability changes.
Also, it was reported in the first versions of Lion that voiceover support for Launchpad was a little bit iffy, and this release has apparently improved that. Like I said, we don't have a Mac, we don't know, but that's the information that we're getting about the release.
Yeah, I'll put an article in the post for this concerning the 10.7.2 that CNET put out that has a pretty extensive list of things. I believe that was the only voiceover thing that was actually referenced at that point.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the iPhone 4S.
Oh, I think this deserves another ding.
Oh. Alrighty. The iPhone 4S went on sale for pre-orders last Friday. They sold 1 million
phones in 24 hours.
So I guess that means that 1 million people probably had 3GSs and wanted to upgrade.
For the. To put this into perspective, the iPhone 4, when it came out, sold 600,000 in the first 24 hours.
Yeah, I don't see there being a huge jump from the 4 to the 4S.
No,
the
I
camera,
think, yeah,
the camera, the processor, you know, the processor's more. We did find out today that from iFixit, who does a teardown of these devices all the time, that the phone actually has 512 megabytes of RAM, which is the same as the current iPhone 4. And they tweaked the battery a little bit so that it gives you more talk time, but it takes away a little bit from your standby time. So that's something to kind of consider. Let's see, camera improvement. Yeah, that's pretty much the biggest thing.
So, yeah. And, of course, the Siri. It's got, I guess, a little bit better processor so it can handle the Siri. But the biggest disappointment for me was not the increased RAM memory as I had thought.
Yeah, because that would definitely help with the Siri.
Oh, yeah.
And
definitely.
Probably doing OCR and things like that with the camera.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, bad.
Mm-hmm. Not as big of an upgrade internally as we thought.
Yeah, but it's pretty much a given that they're on a 2-year cycle.
Yeah.
You buy a 3GS, you're going to be pretty much locked into that contract unless you really want to pay the extra money to get out of your contract and move right on.
Right.
So, we're waiting for next October or July or whatever.
Well, our contract ends in July.
Yeah, but there's got to be a new iPhone before we purchase. Unless you want an Android phone.
No.
Okay.
But we have to renew our contract somehow.
Well, do it when the phone comes out.
But what about between the month? Never mind.
It goes month to month.
Oh, true. True. Okay. Anyway, enough of our personal life.
This is what it's like to be here.
Yeah.
Don't you feel privileged?
Exactly. All right.
Today is the second day of the coming of iOS 5.
Ooh.
And the reason it's infamous is because there was heck of a lot of problems.
Yeah. Some people upgraded without a hitch, but a lot of people reported various hiccups. I did an audio boo about this last night. Posted it under my personal Twitter account, talking about the fact that you have to be really patient when you upgrade, because this upgrade's a little bit different from past upgrades that I've ever experienced. So, first of all, of course, you have to download the software from Apple's server, and this may take a while, and especially did yesterday, because I'm not sure exactly what time it came out, but when I started downloading at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, I mean, the run on the server was just horrific, and I had to try downloading twice before I could get a download that didn't time out on me.
Yeah, I think it came out right around noon Eastern or 1 p.m. Eastern, because I can't remember. I think it might have been Tom Merritt said that he saw a post on Google Plus that iOS 5 has already been jailbroken even after being out for only 30 minutes
that's
or something.
Funny.
And he went and immediately downloaded it and said, went pretty quick. So I came home and plugged my phone
in. I was still going.
And I was at 4:26 in the afternoon. I was finished by around 5:35, I believe.
Oh, I was still going. I wasn't done till almost 5. Well, almost.
You finished right around the same time I did, finally.
Because
after we figured it out.
Yeah, well, see, the key is patience. And I do not have vast quantities of that material. So, you know, I got it and I spent an hour trying to back up the phone. Because before you do a restore and upgrade it, you have to back it up. And it did not like my latest backup. So I had to figure out, go on the internet, figure out how to deal with that situation. Finally got the phone backed up. Just before you came home, actually. Then, you do the restore on the phone, and this is where it gets confusing, because it looks, like after a while, it looks like it's done. And it just sits, iTunes just sits there, and you think, okay, well, it's got to be done. Because it comes up and says, installing your apps on your iPhone, and then sits for freaking ever.
Yeah, and the estimate is that it must be going out and touching the server to get your apps back or to confirm your credentials
purchases
and things.
Because I thought it was done. And when you look at the iPhone, it has some setup screens to go through to make sure that iOS 5 is installed on your phone correctly, the way you want it.
Yeah.
You set up your, you know, do you want location services on or off? Do you agree to the terms and conditions? There are like 4 different little screens. So I thought it was done. And I thought VoiceOver is supposed to be like all nice, and it sounded just crappy and nasty. And I thought, there's something, this doesn't seem right. And I unplugged the iPhone from the computer, and the apps looked like they were all there. I had my 4 pages of apps like I was supposed to, same folders and everything.
Plus the new ones.
Plus the new ones. plus the new ones, and I thought, okay, it's done. And I tried to reconnect the phone to the computer, and iTunes had an absolute fit. It said the iPhone wasn't recognized, and it wasn't a known phone, and it gave me weird error codes that did not show up on Apple's support pages. So restarting the computer from scratch and running iTunes as administrator and then hooking up the phone made it finish.
Yeah. It's kind of bizarre because usually it gives you like the little status bar in the top of the iTunes that says percent done and downloading and all that kind of stuff. But this time, a lot of the information was on a pop-up that it put right in the middle of the screen.
But screen readers didn't like.
Yeah, and a lot of times it was not in focus, and you really couldn't get it to focus onto that whatsoever. So that was kind of concerning because I was sitting here and I'm like, okay, are you done?
Yeah, because, I mean, even you who are looking at the screen didn't quite know what was going on.
Yeah, because at one point it was like the Apple, and then it went black, and it just sat there. And I'm like, are you done?
Woohoo!
Hey, little dude, you done?
Hello?
And then after about 2 minutes or so, that little box popped up on the screen again, and it started doing its restore, and then it did it again, and it brought back the little Apple on the screen and all this kind of stuff and restored the phone, and then it had to do the exact same thing for the applications, and it was just like pulling teeth. I did hear one report from somebody at work today that they downloaded and installed it and everything, and it only took about 20 minutes.
No.
But I'm kind of guessing that the person wasn't someone that had like podcasts and a whole bunch of stuff on their phone.
Well, yeah, but I mean, sheesh. I know someone who it took 6 hours yesterday. Now, I thought 4 was bad. 6 is a little much.
Yeah. And 2, when I got home and you were still working with all of that, I turned VoiceOver off and it seemed to behave a little better.
It was a little bit faster, but I don't think the VoiceOver was the issue.
I don't
it was
know.
Just
might
it
have
was
just been a coincidence.
Real slow. I think it was just a coincidence.
Yeah, and other people that were cited that were doing it, they accidentally interrupted it during one of those restore or backup portions because they thought it was finished.
Exactly, just like I did.
And it broke, just like what you experienced.
Yeah, I'm so lucky that it didn't break the phone.
Yeah. Now Tom Merritt on Tech News Today said that he had actual icons gone. Folders were gone.
Ooh.
He actually lost his playlist. There was no reason as to why. He's seen a few places on the internet where people had a similar issue, so it must be some sort of a unique thing going on.
Maybe.
But anyway, iOS 5 has a lot of new options.
Oh, whoa.
Oh, what? Hmm? Oh, you're doing another ding. Mm-hmm. Okay, keep the karma going, I guess.
iOS 5 has a lot of new options. Chief among them are the Notification Center.
Which is interesting.
Kind of cool.
It's a little bit annoying when you have multiple applications going at the same time, like Echofon or
Boxcar,
and then you actually get a text message or something. It just kind of goes ape nuts.
Yeah. Newsstand, which we beat to death earlier in the podcast.
How's the accessibility on that? Mm-hmm. Can it read? No.
And let's see. What are some other ones? Non-voiceover related improvements.
The camera is able to be used from the home screen. So if you've got your iPhone in front of you and you have the screen locked, you can double tap the home button and it will put the camera logo right beside where you slide to unlock.
Yeah, so double tapping the home button brings that up. And if you've got a podcast going, it brings up that little mini player, and it also has the camera in there.
Yeah, because there are a few people saying, oh no, it's going to get rid of the mini player. But that actually still continues to work at the top of the screen. It just shortens the swipe here to unlock.
Yeah.
It shortens that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what else is kind of cool about it? Well, it has the iCloud integration, which is irritating because
it wants to back up your entire phone to your iCloud. And you're not, if those of us who have more than 5 gigabytes of stuff on our phone, it's not going to work. You have to kind of tell it what to not back up and what to back up.
Yeah, there's a lot more settings now than what there was before. There is an article where a CNET person listed some of the annoyances, and
that was top on the list almost.
Not being able to easily manage what it's backing up, because if you have apps, it wants to back up all of the data.
Mm-hmm.
So like I've got Downcast. Downcast has about 10 gigs worth of podcast on here, and it wanted to back all of those up. Can't do that, dude. Can't
only have 5 that. Gigs.
Another annoyances was the fact that photos that you take are automatically uploaded to your photo stream. Haven't looked at this yet, but apparently you cannot delete them. So be careful what you're doing.
Another thing that Apple iOS 5 offers is Wi-Fi sync. And if you're doing it over the air and you're doing it manually, you don't have to have a power source connected to your phone.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it automatically, did I get that right?
Yeah. If you want to sync your phone to iTunes automatically, you will have to have it plugged into the wall outlet so that it has extra power. So say you go to bed and you want it to upload overnight, you need to let it be plugged in.
Right.
Which I don't know why you wouldn't want it to be. There is an issue with the mark as in the email, in the email client, because now if you want to mark a set of messages as read, you have to actually select what you want to do.
You can either mark them as flagged or mark them as unread.
Yeah.
And it involves like another extra step.
Yeah.
So some people find that annoying. Some people like it. Some people don't. The reminders. I actually think that's kind of cool. You can set reminders for different tasks. People point out that there are various to-do list apps in the App Store that do the same thing, but it's kind of nice to have that built into your phone. I mean, you know, I'll explore this on a Tech Access Daily Tip, but this is just to remind you to do things, and you can check off whether they're completed or not.
Yeah, and I believe when you actually do things like setting reminders, I think it updates your calendar as well.
It does, because this morning when I had a reminder, it also said, calendar alert, you have a calendar event. So it updated my calendar. I didn't know it was going to do that. One other thing iOS 5 has is iMessages. I haven't quite experimented with this really yet, but it allows you to message your contacts who may also be using iDevices.
Yeah, and when you go into your typical messages area, it will say in the edit box, text or iMessage. If you are a visual user, it will put the buttons and text that you are sending in green. If it is an iMessage, it will put them in blue. So that's something to note.
And you can configure your iMessage settings in Settings and Messages.
Yes.
You know, to configure your iMessage settings.
Yes. And as far as like notifications, if you still want to get your notifications to pop up in the middle of the screen instead of doing the little tiny thing at the top of the screen, which is kind of
really annoying
because it's there and it's gone.
Yeah.
You can actually change that back to where it actually does the...
Yeah, under notifications. Yeah, you can do that. And I'm planning to demonstrate that in a tip because it's a little kludgy. But anyway.
Yeah, it's got a lot of nice features. We've only been playing with it for 24 hours or so, but it seems nice. I have noticed a few clunky things. I'm not using VoiceOver. I'm just using the Zoom settings. And it seems like occasionally when I'm trying to actually click on a button, I have to do it more than once.
I've had that similar problem with VoiceOver too, so I don't know whether it's a software, whether it's just an iOS thing or whether it's an accessibility thing.
Yeah, and a couple of people have mentioned on Twitter in response to a couple of tweets I put out there that they were experiencing the same thing, that if you turn off Zoom and VoiceOver, it might go back to the way it was. I tried it and it still did that, so I don't know whether iOS 5 is being a little piggy on the resources or not.
I would say iOS 5 is kind of like maybe a little bit sluggish, possibly.
And one bizarre thing is if you're using a Bluetooth keyboard, usually if the screen is locked, you have to tap a key in order to wake the screen up. So like if you're listening to a podcast or music or something, you reach over and you hit pause, you have to double tap it to wake the screen up and then pause it. Well, now it doesn't do that wake up thing. It automatically pauses.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, the screen unlocks and it's paused. So
interesting.
Yeah, that was something bizarre today because I kept double tapping and it was like, start back playing.
Like, eh?
And I paused you.
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of interesting. Okay. Are we going into the accessibility of iOS 5 now? voiceover?
Why don't we? So how is the accessibility of newsstand?
We're not talking about newsstand again. Okay. This is voiceover improvements to iOS 5.
How's voiceover with newsstand?
Well, I will say with Zoom, there is a new keystroke. It is a three-finger triple tap. We'll turn Zoom on and off now. I think that's a new one. The triple-click home keystroke automatically defaults to voiceover. Usually it used to ask you what you wanted it to do. And if you have VoiceOver on, you know, installed and are using it, it automatically defaults to VoiceOver.
Actually, with the Zoom, I think it was a triple finger tap.
Yeah.
Double tap that you had to do in order to turn Zoom on. I had to grab the phone and try it now, but yeah, that's what it is.
Okay.
I'm one of these people that sometimes I can't remember the keystroke, but if I touch the device or the keyboard, I instantly remember.
Mm-hmm. VoiceOver has several different improvements. When you install it, it will determine what your default language is, and it will install a uncompacted version of the voice for that language. So all your other voices will be installed in a compact, less high-quality mode, similar to the mode they were in iOS 4 and earlier. But the language that you are using as your default language has a higher-quality voice that it uses. You can default to a lower quality voice if you need to do something rather processor intensive and you don't want VoiceOver taking up so much resources.
So you get, let's see.
Well.
VoiceOver on. Messages.
That.
Oh, I turned VoiceOver off.
Oh, don't I turned VoiceOver on. That's what it just said. VoiceOver on.
Yeah, you get good Samantha. And if you want a lower quality voice, you can change it in the settings and you'll get
emphysema Samantha.
Yeah, emphysema Samantha. And an interesting thing is, when it reads various highlighted buttons, like say I went into settings and it was going to read a back button, it reads some of the highlighted buttons in the lower quality voice, I guess for a different, so you know that it's a kind of a singled out kind of thing.
Oh, that's kind of nifty.
Oh God, now we got both of our phones doing it.
No, that was just yours.
Anyway. So that is one good thing, nice quality voice. It will only install the default language voice that way. So if you want a different language, another high quality voice, you have to set another default language. So just keep that in mind. There are
You mean I could get French?
Yeah, but
tell me parlez-vous Francie. No.
There are some other improvements to VoiceOver. One that people really like is the ability to put descriptions to unlabeled buttons and images in apps. So there is a keystroke. You can do a double tap and hold, I think a two-finger double tap and hold, and it will allow you to enter text to describe the button that is not labeled. Of course, you have to know what it does.
Until the developer changes it.
Right, exactly. But once you know what it does, you can do that and enter in the text. Now, one cool thing for hearing impaired users is that it allows you to... Well, it has better hearing aid support. I'm not quite sure what that means, built in. It allows you to set custom vibrations for different people, so in different contacts. And I haven't really explored how to do this, but if your phone's on silent and mom calls you, you can have it set to a certain vibration pattern. If it's on silent and Rodney calls you, you can have it set to a different vibration pattern for him.
Interesting.
And also, it has improved support for people who need to use remote control devices. I guess if you have limited hand mobility and are still wanting to use an iPhone, it has support to hook up those kinds of devices to it so you can use the iPhone remotely. Mm-hmm. So those are just a few of the accessibility improvements. We have a couple of articles bookmarked that talk about the iOS, the VoiceOver improvements specifically. So go to our delicious bookmarks to look for those under 112.
Yes, and if I can remember to do it, I'll include it in the post for this podcast.
If the podcast ever gets done.
Yeah, if it does ever. Mm-hmm. Next. How do you do? Apple has now won a patent for text-to-speech.
Well, it's working on one.
Well, actually, it won it.
Well, no, it won it. It's a way to... It's trying to develop its own text-to-speech engine, I guess, because it won a patent for some text-to-speech, and it does the text-to-speech by putting together a library of phrases instead of just a library of words to make the speech sound even more natural. And people are wondering about this because maybe this means that Apple's trying to develop its own text-to-speech engines for its apps rather than relying on those from Nuance.
Well, and with their developments with Siri, it might make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. It does make sense.
Maybe they need that so that they can actually say the answers that Siri comes back with.
Exactly.
I was watching iPad Today. Today, actually. And M.G. Siegler of TechCrunch was there, and he was showing an iPhone 4S with Siri, and he was like, "What's the temperature in San Francisco today?" And it showed it on the screen. It didn't speak what it was. So it's kind of like, okay, you're trying to help me out, but I'm still going to have to look at the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Next.
Oh, yeah. Ding.
Does that count as a double ding?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Because you said ding.
No, it does not count as a double ding.
See, we're getting confused by these dings. For someone with lots of money.
Bling!
Computer Choppers, Choppers. I haven't heard of these people. But they have come out with a 24-karat gold MacBook Pro for the people that just have everything.
Wow.
And it proves that diamonds are Apple's best friends.
How can you even use that? If it's 24 karat, it's just going to, it can melt in your hands.
Well, it's kind of not really 100% 24 karat gold. The chassis is coated in 24 karat gold, looks like, has a paisley design, which you can actually pay extra to get your own personal design. But the kicker is that the Apple on the back lid of the MacBook Pro is all diamond.
Oh, okay.
Now, the person that actually posted this, I believe it was on TechCrunch, maybe, or Engadget, I'm not sure. But they pointed out that Call Me, when they actually replaced the black chiclet keys with something other than janky plastic.
Oh, that's a jip. They didn't replace the black chiclet keys with, like, black diamonds or black sapphires or anything?
Yeah, no.
Oh, geez.
Still just cruddy.
Ugh.
Now, continuing on that idea, maybe HP is going to start making those. Maybe
but it's weird because they're leading in PC sales, even though they have said they are giving up the hardware business.
Well, the personal computer business in some fashion, which they really haven't outlined that as of yet.
No.
A new report comes out saying that in Q3, the HP computer company sold 91.8 million units for a 3.2% increase over 2010.
Woo-hoo.
The big news in this was the fact that Apple computers actually grew over last year by 21%. So they have gained in a tremendous amount of market share, but they are still number three behind Dell.
Dell and HP.
Yes.
Is it time for another ding?
Ding. Now, into accessibility news, there is a new tablet.
Yeah, this is a video. This thing was done at Stanford University. It's currently a research project, and it is an app for tablets which allows you to write in Braille using the Braille keyboard, the 8-key Braille keyboard, and the keyboard on the app itself orients to your hands. So if your hands are in, the sort of the top of the screen of the tablet, that's where the keyboard will be. If your hands are lower down, that's where it'll be. And you, of course, press your fingertips in the required series of dots for any Braille character, and it will print it on the screen.
Yeah, Adam Duran of New Mexico State and Adrian Liu of Stanford University came up with this. And here is a small explanation of the whole thing, if I can get the replay button.
Stanford University.
I touch my 8 fingers to the screen anywhere.
Calibrated.
And the keyboard is built. This project is a piece of software that allows visually impaired users to type very efficiently on these modern day tablet PCs such as iPads, Android, mobile phones, essentially anything with a touchscreen.
B, C, D.
The way it works is, instead of having fingers which find the buttons, we build buttons that find the fingers.
Calibrated.
Once you shake the device, the menu is activated.
Menu activated.
You interact with the menu options by dragging your finger across the screen.
Input type chemistry.
Once I've selected the menu option, I simply release my finger from the screen.
Chemistry launch.
So now the keyboard is set to type chemistry.
2H. plus. Oh.
What currently exists is physical note takers, which are generally big and clunky and could range from $3,000 to $6,000. Tablet PCs are available at a fraction of the cost and do so much more.
Email launch, compose, edit box, sending message.
Just because you're visually impaired doesn't mean you have anything less to offer. Who knows what we're going to get because of this device. It's opening a door that wasn't open before.
Calibrated. Calibrated.
For more, please visit us at stanford.edu.
So that's kind of a cool device.
Neat. There. Yeah, they were using an Android phone, an Android tablet.
Yeah, a small, it was probably a 7-inch tablet.
I don't think this is out yet in any kind of app store. It's still under development, but I think it's on its way.
Yeah, it puts like little dots on the screen, but as he said, you really don't have to hit those dots in order to make it. It kind of knows a general area of where your fingers are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had problems like touching it, you could actually touch in a different configuration and the dots will adjust to that.
Yes.
Like if your hands are more askewed to one side than the other, it will adjust.
It will adjust it.
So that's kind of cool.
That's awesome.
So yeah, maybe more coming with that.
Oh, my ding.
There is a new Victor Reader.
The Victor Reader Stratus is out and will be shipping soon. You can place your order now. Actually, it may have started shipping by now. I'm not sure. But anyway, this is a $450 or so device from Humanware that will allow you to read material on CDs, DVDs, flash drives, and SD cards. It is specially designed. Well, there are a few different models. There is one that is the 12-key model that has the telephone-style keypad on it, like existing on the Plextalk Pocket or the Victor Reader Stream, for very close navigation. You know, you can navigate by page numbers and all this kind of thing. There's another model that just has a few keys on it, I guess similar to what the NLS talking book player has on it,
we just recently got.
Yeah, we have actually two of them somehow. But anyway, that you can just do simple things on. But it allows you to do many of the same things that current readers allow you to do. You can read Daisy books, listen to music, even read computer documents in various formats on it. The main difference between it and the Victor Reader Stream is that it has the CD or DVD. I think you can read DVDs as well. If they contain Daisy materials or audio, you can read those. I do not see anything on this device in the article I read about any kind of Wi-Fi capability. I know it doesn't have a radio like the...
BookSense?
Yeah, BookSense XT has that AM/FM radio thing going on. And so I'm not exactly sure what makes this unique. I do know that it uses the acapella voices, which are nicer than Emphysema Samantha that current Victor Reader uses. But, you know, you can check it out at Humanware if you'd like more information on it. And there's a product review on our delicious bookmarks.
Humanware.com.
Yes. The BookSense XT, thank you for reminding me, has come out with a firm upgrade. HIMSS has issued a version 2.3 for the BookSense XT firmware. And this gives more flexibility with the voice navigation commands. You can actually record your own commands into it. And a lot of other interesting features and bug fixes. So if you've got a BookSense XT, go to the website and get your latest firmware upgrade. The National Federation for the Blind and University of Pennsylvania, Penn State University, have come to an agreement. They were having some issues with Penn State not making its materials available to students in accessible formats, and Penn State has agreed to make its materials, come up with a strategy to make its materials available in all venues. So classes, even down to the students' banking and financial transactions, to make all that accessible, lecture materials, textbooks, et cetera.
Yes, interesting, because back, I guess, in about 2003, when I was working at UNC Chapel Hill, we had Penn State University come down and see what kind of web applications we were doing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they were just completely floored because we were so far beyond them. And then some of our people, I think, went up there for a tour of something.
You're not talking about accessibility. You're just talking about the
whole,
in general.
And when they went up to Penn State, it was like
no man's land.
1996.
Ooh.
In 2003 or 2004 when that was.
Wow.
So they're just now getting caught up to the boat.
Speaking of educational institutions, the one of the directors for the former directors for the Perkins Institution for the Blind,
Dr. Edward Ellis Allen, he was
director,
director
from 1907 to 1931.
Beat you.
Yeah, he is going to be formally inducted into the Blind Leadership and Legends Hall of Fame, which is at the American Printing House for the Blind, and they recognize people who have made contributions to the blindness community. And Dr. Allen was very forward-thinking in his desire to educate blind people and also to ensure that they remain physically fit. He wanted each blindness institution, it was called the Institution for the Blind at that time, folks, what can I say, to have gymnasiums and swimming pools and things in them to make sure that people stayed fit. He also began training the first of what we would call today special education teachers to teach blind students, I guess in regular school environments. I'm not really certain. But he began, you know, training to teach blind students, and he was also very influential in working with some psychiatrists to determine that blind people were not less intelligent than their sighted counterparts.
Uh-huh.
So, congratulations to Edward Ellis Allen, who I believe died in, what was it, 1961?
Something like
that. He was like 91 or something like that.
I have to say, he probably was able to keep blind kids in better shape than now, seeing as how they didn't have Cheetos.
I am certain of that. Nuance has joined the Liberated Learning Consortium. This is a group of technology companies and universities and other institutions of education that work to make education itself more accessible, especially for those people who have disabilities, print and verbal disabilities. So Nuance is the second technology company, along with IBM, to have joined this. And what they're going to try and do is help to find ways in which text recognition can be used to make and record transcripts of lectures and other materials into written format for those who have hearing impairments or other speech impairments.
Excellent.
Excellent indeed.
What were you thinking?
We have to keep this stealing talk going because a month ago we had a story that said that identity theft was more profitable than drug trade. Last week we had the five weirdest things that people steal.
Dogs,
and this week,
hogs and such.
Hair and stuff. And this week we're just going to combine the two into one and talk about the fact that identity theft is more profitable than car theft.
Go figure.
So dealerships, companies who maintain financials for dealerships have been noticing a trend whereby their customers, the dealerships, computers have been hacked into and customers' sensitive financial credit card information has been stolen. Because, well, you get more out of someone's credit card than you do out of their car.
Yes, very much so.
So more profitable than drug trade, more profitable than car theft. Now, in terms of, you know, which is more profitable, drug trade or car theft, we really don't know.
Well, I mean, it comes down to, okay, is the car theft, they're stealing things out of the car, you know, CDs, iPods, iPhones,
I think they mean cars.
Or are they actually concerned with stealing the car and doing like the whole chop shop thing where it's
That's what I took it to mean.
Pieces and parts and
that's
stuff.
That's what I took it to mean.
So probably either way, it's probably a lot easier to steal someone's identity than it is to steal a car and have to cut it up and everything. You could get welding burns or something.
Ow! Now, going along with the weird things that people steal, we talked about the fact that one of the top things was brass last week. Well, now we see someone who stole something just for the scrap metal. Last week in Pennsylvania, I believe it's Newcastle, Pennsylvania, there was a 20-foot-long bridge made of corrugated metal that spanned some... it was the back entrance to some company property of a private company.
I believe it was 50-foot. It was 50 feet.
Yes. Maybe it was 50 feet.
Yeah, it was 50
feet. Yeah, it was 50 feet. I don't know where the 20 feet was coming from.
I don't know.
But anyway, it was a 50-foot-long bridge valued at approximately $100,000, and it was just taken. No one knows how. No one knows why. Well, probably for the scrap metal. And no one knows exactly when or how it was done. They just walked out there one morning, and it was gone.
My question is, how are you actually going to sell that? I mean, going to be a little bit obvious?
Well, presumably they had to take it apart because it came apart in sections.
Yeah.
So presumably they had to take it apart to get it into a truck. So, I mean, maybe they had ways to hack the pieces. But even so, I mean, you'd think it would like be long rail looking things. It would be a little obvious that it was a bridge. Or,
I don't know.
I don't know.
When you have things like tornado areas and things, people will steal the copper out of houses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll steal metal fittings and all that kind of stuff. I think people actually have had like motors from air conditioners stolen and things. So,
yeah.
It doesn't surprise me. It's
just
very
was a little bit weird.
Might as well go for the gusto.
I guess.
I guess it's shorter than the Golden Gate, though. That might be a little obvious.
That, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
It's probably on an isolated piece of property.
And what's also obvious is that this podcast has been going on
for freaking too long.
For over an hour. So we need to say goodbye and wrap it up.
Yes, you have been listening to Tech Access Weekly, episode
112 for October 13th, 2011.
Yes. If you would like to find the bookmarks for this or considered for this episode, you can go over to delicious.com/techaccess/112. If you would like to check out The Melting Pot on mushroomfm.com, you can do so on Sunday evenings from 7 to 10 p.m.
Eastern Time.
Yes.
And
I believe this week is...
Yeah. This week I'll be talking about the worst songs from the 80s and 90s. Yeah, that was going to be last week's and it got put on hold. And so that will be done this week. And if you would like to leave us any kind of commentary, you can email us at techaccessweekly@gmail.com, follow TA_weekly on Twitter, or call 260-227-5829, otherwise known as 2AskTAW.
Yes, and you can follow us on Twitter personally at Rodney Edgar, RodneyEdgar.
So and Aaron pimp. Edgar, ErinEdgar.
Yeah, we never pimp that.
No, we never do.
We're going to have to start that. Maybe we'll
do
commercials.
Oh, God, not another thing.
Why not? Jeez. Before long, we'll get a whole bunch of promos and there'll be less show.
Or people just won't like us anymore and they'll stop listening.
That's probably true. After that newsstand thing.
I know.
Did you say whether or not that was accessible?
Shut up.
Bye-bye.
Bye.